Tony and Jenny Brewski here from Real Ghost Stories Online. There has never been a better time than now to be an EPP, extra podcast person, to Real Ghost Stories Online.
There's more exclusive content than ever before.
Plus, our new EPP website is up and running where you can access all of our exclusive content anywhere you want on any device. Exclusive video, all of the archived episodes, it's all there when you sign up to be an EPP at realghoststoriesonline.com.
It's only $5 a month.
And that goes to keeping our show on the air and alive. Sign up now, become an EPP, and enjoy all of the bonus episodes for yourself when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com. Just click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode, a home in Pennsylvania just feels a little off and seems to hold previous inhabitants. A secret underground storage facility can be creepy on its own, not to mention the ghosts there. Sounds of happy children echo in the middle school pool, only the entire pool facility is empty. An unusual occurrences seem to happen, but only when a listener's twin is visiting. Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
Hi there.
Hey, something about pools that are creepy.
Yeah.
Not necessarily filled ones. Is this an active pool?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then I wouldn't be that creeped out.
No.
Until the ghosts show up.
It's not off season or abandoned or anything. Okay.
Abandoned pools are what, I don't know. There's just something spooky about them.
Why?
I don't know. I've always been kind of drawn to them.
Mm-hmm.
I've always enjoyed, if I had a chance to go and explore one, I would. I don't know why. It's just always had a weird mystique to it. I think it's just kind of the whole, you know, reason why I'm drawn to abandoned, you know, modern buildings, you know, like urban exploration type things.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's an area that, you know, probably had not all that long ago, you know, a lot of real happy things going on, you know, people playing there. And now it's, you know, when you see it then in its dilapidated, rotting away state, it's just, I don't know, makes it more real.
Okay.
Than going out and finding the remnants of an old cabin in the woods. That doesn't freak me out all that much. If I'm finding like a foundation,
mm-hmm,
or a chimney out in the woods somewhere, that's kind of neat. It's kind of rustic-y, but I don't feel creeped out by it. Much more creeped out by going and seeing like a floor in a hotel that its pool has been defunct for years and now it's just rotting away.
Okay, that is interesting.
Yeah.
See, I don't think I would have a preference, I guess, for lack of a better term, of what creeps me out the, mm-hmm, most.
I have different levels of what I get creeped out by.
Okay.
Or going and exploring an abandoned hotel or whatever. You know,
mm-hmm,
something that not all that long ago, maybe, you know, at least closed down for 20 to 30 years. That idea is a lot creepier to me than finding an old settler camp.
Could it be the more energy filled the building or the place, the more you're creeped out by it, by being desolate and rotting?
It can be in the middle of a city. You know, I think it's, I don't know if it's just because it feels that much more real to me, where I have some memory of it being an active place, or can more easily picture it being, you know, an active building and facility, and now seeing it all rotting away, it's like just the stark contrast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much easier for me to picture, you know, a hotel circa 1984 that looks like 1984 as an active hotel in 1984 than seeing it today in 2015, you know, rotting away.
Okay.
I think it just makes it more real, as opposed to seeing a building circa 1910 that's gotten so dilapidated and fallen apart, and in the fixtures in it and all that are just so foreign to me. I mean, I know what they are, but they're, mm-hmm, just not ever part of my life or anything I ever saw active, other than like in a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman episode. It's just not quite as concurrent. I don't know. Makes
sure.
Sense?
Yeah, it kind of does.
There was a hotel that I stayed at in Toledo once. And I remember going up to the top floor of it, and it was their pool. And at one time, what a cool idea, pool on the top floor of this hotel. I mean, the building wasn't super tall. I don't know, probably, 15 stories maybe. It used to be a nice big pool, for being on top of a building, pretty cool. I imagine probably built in, the 50s or the 60s. This was about 1999-ish when I was there, and it had been defunct. It was just there, and it was kind of, peeling away and rotting away. For some reason, the lights were still on in that room, the pool room, and you could still kind of access it.
Oh, that's strange.
It was weird. Yeah. And it just felt creepy. I mean, there's been other times, too, where I've been when we would travel as a kid, sometimes we would, find whatever hotel we could stay at for the night. And some of these would be, very 1960s hotels that were still open, or motels or motor lodges. And then some would have pools, or had a pool. And sometimes those buildings would still be up and the pool's drained and it's just there. Or there'd be one out back that was kind of filled in. And I always just, I found it creepy. Maybe I felt energy there, and maybe that's what's drawing me to it. And I just don't put my finger on it as energy. I just have some sort of weird being drawn to it. I don't know.
Could be.
There you go. Now we all know I like ghost pools.
Okay.
So there you go. Hey, by the way, there's going to be an exorcism on television soon.
What?
A live televised exorcism.
When is that happening?
We'll talk about it shortly.
Okay.
All right. That's called a teaser.
Okay.
Here in the podcasting business. So it's coming up. Angie writes in today. We moved to Pennsylvania in the early 90s. I was around 19 and lived with my parents still. My dad worked for the National Park Service, and we lived in a historical area. The house we moved to in Pennsylvania was close to 100 years old and had been previously occupied by the owners who had passed away. Not sure if they died in the house. The house itself gave me the creeps from the start. We were in a very rural area, and it was quite dark at night. Something always felt off about this house. I never felt comfortable there, especially when I was only by myself. I also suffered from a deep depression, health problems I never had before, and horrible anxiety when we moved into this house. I also had horrible nightmares and dark thoughts. It was an awful experience for me. It seemed to lighten up when I was at work or away from home. My room was the only one downstairs, and my parents and younger brother's room were upstairs. We had one bathroom in the entire house, and it was right next to my room. I'd hear my family walking around back and forth to the bathroom all night long and waking me up. When I angrily confronted them in the morning for making so much noise, they thought I was crazy because none of them got up during the night. Sometimes I would hear footsteps, which sounded like someone dragging their hand along the wall, like they were supporting themselves as they walked. Needless to say, I never slept very well there. I had two dogs at the time, one very old dog and one puppy. The puppy would try to play with the old dog, and she would spin around and bark at the puppy to leave her alone. Both dogs seemed to sense something at times. They'd stare at the walls with their ears perked up, they'd growl at nothing, and they seemed to see something we could not. Sadly, my puppy broke out of the fence and got run over and died. I was heartbroken. The strange thing is that after the puppy died, my dog would still spin around at nothing and growl like the puppy was there, wanting to play with her. It wasn't the only one to experience strange occurrences in the house. My parents were awoken in the middle of the night by a loud, heavy, urgent pounding on the front door. My dad jumped up and ran down to see who was there, only to find no one. The house was very rural, as I said previously, and we had no close neighbors. If someone were playing a trick, they would have to drive to the house. My dad stayed up to see car lights or hear someone outside, but heard and saw nothing more. Another time, my mom was cleaning upstairs when she heard a strange, loud thumping noise under the bed. She looked under the bed, and there was nothing. The basement was the worst. Dark, damp, and oppressive. None of us went down there unless we absolutely needed to. My mom was down there on one occasion and heard my dad's footsteps on the floor above her. She called out to him with no answer. She came upstairs only to find out she was still alone in the house. One time, my brother and mom were home alone watching TV when they heard a faint rustling noise. Suddenly, a swarm of bats came flying out of the chimney into the house. They had to call for some of the park rangers to come help them round up the bats to get them out of the house. It wasn't necessarily supernatural. Talk about creepy and adding to the haunted house mystique. Glad I was gone by that time. My dad finally joked about our house being haunted to the local guys he worked with one day. They matter-of-factly stated they didn't know our house was haunted, but the other ones up the road definitely were. I moved out of there as soon as I could. I definitely know why they say Pennsylvania is the most haunted state. Love your podcast. Keep up the good work.
I wonder what makes the environment ripe for ghosts to feel invited. And, you know, because obviously there was something there in the house before they moved in. But then when the dog got hit, you know, it became a ghost and stuck around too.
Mm-hmm.
It just almost felt to me like in the story, it was just kind of a haven for ghosts.
I don't know. I wonder if it's the actions of the living in the home, not necessarily the current inhabitants or the inhabitants of that place and time, but just the events that occurred on that area, and who knows what they may or may not be. Mm-hmm. But I think that can certainly be an invite, whether it be someone like consciously trying to bring in ghosts or call upon them, or just nothing to do with ghosts, just a very, emotionally hot environment with, and I don't mean that like sexually, I mean like just emotionally, very charged, I think should probably be the better word.
Okay.
Where people are, you know, either really, I could see it going either way, extremely happy, extremely depressed, extremely anything to an extreme, and it interacting and however those interactions were, I could see that then residually just kind of being a place. Essentially, it's like charging a battery.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very mundane environment. Nothing's going on there. You're probably not going to have many hauntings. But over the years, the comings and goings of people, I think those people are what make that environment what it is.
Okay.
It's just my thoughts.
Sounds good.
So, your thoughts?
I don't know. I wondered. I don't know. I lost it.
Okay.
Sorry.
I just think some of that energy just ends up going into our things, and I think some of those things can very well be buildings,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's there. So, I mean, and there's been studies on that. Who did I talk to recently? It was somebody I talked to recently. I think it was on the show where they did some studies on objects and
the charge that's held.
Okay. And just like mundane objects that should not be holding any sort of energy charge, comparing one from the factory and one that's, I think it was like a stuffed animal or something. It was like one from the factory and one that's been like loved for a long time. And the one that had been loved held a lot more charge to it than the one that has had no interaction with anything. So I think that that's, you know, it can go into our walls and the boards and everything and essentially become what it is.
Yeah.
So, and the ground too.
Yeah.
And everything that's under it. So that's my explanation.
Okay.
And I'm sticking to it. Shannon writes, and hello, my name is Shannon. I live in Independence, Missouri, right outside of Kansas City. And it's pronounced more like misery instead of Missouri. Am I doing that correctly?
Yeah.
So misery.
Misery.
Can I say misery?
No,
let's go over to misery.
No, she's just giving an example. Just say Missouri.
Missouri.
Instead of Missouri.
I don't like Missouri.
No, it's Missouri.
I like Missouri. Mm-hmm. That's how I always grew up saying it.
Yeah, but misery sounds a lot like.
Sure. Missouri. What she's trying to say. Yeah. Is that because up north we always said Missouri?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I came to Kansas where like Kansans started calling it Missouri. Was that like a big F you to Missouri?
I don't know.
Like, we're not going to call it the right thing, so we're going to fuck it up. You know, is that.
It could be the hate
the rivalry
between the two states. It could be. That stemmed back.
Yeah.
to before either one was a state.
I don't know if it was like a giant FU or if it was like a giant we're ignorant and we don't know how to say the names of these states correctly. And like we have the Arkansas River, not Arkansas, it's Arkansas.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I wonder what the origin. And I'm not trying to insult anybody. I'm just curious as to what the origin is.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow. My story today is one from a more recent date. It's not one that happened directly to me, but a close friend of mine of whom I've known since fifth grade. I'm 24 now, and she'll be 24 towards the end of June. We both work at the same government facility, along with my husband and some other friends and family of mine. The story takes place towards the beginning of June 2015. To set the scene of the story a little bit better, which took place at our job site, our facility is located underground in a cave close by. We have four giant stack rooms filled with millions of government files. I'm assuming this is like a salt mine.
I'm assuming it's something like that.
Each stack room is about the size of a football field with up and down stairs and levels. There are also areas with cubicles depending on which department you work in. All right, now that I've laid down somewhat of a vision, I'll continue with the story. Sorry for being so vague, but I can only say so much legally. Currently, I work on first shift while my husband works on second shift. One day, while she was working in a stack room four, she saw a shadow man out of the corner of her eye, which she described as being darker than black, wearing a fedora hat. The next day, she told me in crossing of our shifts about the incident. I then told her about when I started working there. I heard rumors of stacks three and four possibly being haunted, but I've never seen anything for myself. The rumor was that during the building of the facility, a man's ladder fell with him on it, killing him on sight. If any of it's true, I'm uncertain. And she went on to tell me that when researching online about Shadow Man and the fedora hat, it resulted in a meaning of a possible friend's death in the near future. Afterwards, she explained about how her astrological birth chart during her 24th year of living, there's predictions of a death among a close coworker. I personally know nothing about astrology myself, so I can only take it for what she says. Could this possibly mean someone close by will die within the following year? I sure hope not. Only time will tell. I wanted your intake on what you guys have possibly heard and what shadow people in fedoras could mean. Could be greatly appreciated. Thank you guys for all you do. You seriously save me from my long days at work. I sometimes can listen through 6 to 7 episodes in one day. I can promise you I'll become an EPP within the next couple of months. Thanks for putting a smile on my face and challenging me not to laugh out loud throughout my workday. I've been trying to turn on anyone I can to listen to you guys. It does the soul some good. Thanks again, your listener from Independence, Missouri, Shannon. P.S. I plan on submitting my story about the haunted duplex we lived in during my early high school years. Peace out, bitches.
She doesn't say that.
I added the bitches part.
Any additional stories are always welcome, and I think I know that a shadow man and a fedora is a scary thing, but I didn't think it foretold any death.
Oh, it certainly it foretells if you're working in a salt mine.
Okay.
Of imminent danger. No,
I just have to say, what is worse than being stuck in a cubicle all day is being stuck in a cubicle in a cave all day.
Yeah, that...
And I'm sorry for anybody that has to work in a cubicle. I know it can't be a real joy all the time.
Oh, I did it for years. Horrible. Yeah. Horrible. Yeah. I just sat there and, I mean, if you can get engrossed in your work, it's a little bit better. But
mm-hmm.
And I would have things like this, like this show... I would listen to try and distract myself. I would need it. I mean, if I just sat there with nothing and just only focused on my work, which I probably should have done, but I did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed something. Otherwise I would have gone mad.
Sure.
But, but having that then in a cave.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's even, it just depends on the individual. If you're claustrophobic and that thing bothers you, some folks would probably be very much at home and at peace with that. It's just kind of a personal preference.
Yeah, I could see that.
I couldn't handle it.
Shadow men predicting death. What do you think?
I don't know. I think the astrology stuff, I don't really get very much into. I never really have. And I'm not trying to discount it from anybody. If that's your thing, okay. I've never really felt or personally seen anyone who's ever told me anything astrological.
Oh, bullshit.
What?
You are a Leo to the T.
Okay. Well, I'm saying people like saying, oh, according to the sign, this is going to happen to you.
Yeah.
Never had it like ever come to fruition.
No, but like birth signs, I think more often than not, when I've come across people, yeah, I'm like, okay, what's your sign? That makes sense.
I don't even know what they mean, or I know I'm a Leo, but I don't know what it's, you know, what I'm supposed to be according to that, or what anyone is.
Okay.
So, but I fit into it.
You do. You fit into it.
Okay.
And it's not a bad sun sign.
Sure. I don't know. I always used to look at the one at the Chinese restaurant where it was like your birth year.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot. I think I'm a monkey or something.
You're the monkey.
I forgot. It was always on the menu.
Okay.
And it was another, you know, fortune telling type deal. And I don't know what, I don't remember. It's been so long since I've seen a Chinese menu, Chinese restaurant.
Table menu.
Yeah. They don't really have those anymore. It was back when you could like sit down and order and everything wasn't a buffet.
Yeah.
I liked those ones. They were the best. They were. The food is so much better than the giant, you know, buffets. But anywho, there you go.
Okay.
That's talk of Chinese table menus.
Okay.
At Real Ghost Stories Online. Favorite Chinese food?
My favorite?
Yeah.
Cashew chicken.
Okay.
Yours, orange chicken?
I guess, you know, if we're talking Panda Express style. Yeah, I think something like, there was one that that the restaurant here that now is gone made, and it was not that far of a stretch, but done so much better.
What, tangerine chicken?
The tangerine chicken.
Yeah.
It's like, just name your citrus, and it was delicious.
Yeah.
But yeah, I said that was probably my favorite. So, there you go. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Orange chicken in a taco.
That's gross.
That'd be delicious.
That's gross.
An orange chicken in a nacho taco.
Only if it's like a nacho taco from Taco Bell, not the shit you brought home from Sam's that was bulk closeout that we have like 5 boxes of. These neon orange taco shells that taste like cardboard.
I thought everyone would be so excited that we now were the proud owners of 200 nacho-flavored old El Paso taco shells.
They are nasty. They are not like Doritos taco shells.
Today's show is brought to you by Old El Paso Taco Shells. I'm kidding. And Jenny hates them. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Let's go to Lola. Well, I was in high school in a small Utah town, and my sister was in middle school. Our schools were on the same piece of property. The high schoolers used to pool in the middle school, and the middle school used our football field and band room. The band room, as a matter of fact, was a reason I first started hearing stories about how our schools weren't quite right. Because the school was open, construction was done on the new wing at night after school was over, and construction workers would walk through the old halls. The school only dated back to the 50s, but was in terrible shape. We get to the work site. Apparently, people were quitting the work crew because they would hear the sound of children laughing and carrying on as if class was in session. But when they went to look, the rooms were dark. They were too freaked out to continue working in the building at night. Across the way, there were stories about ghost children at the middle school pool. These were just rumors until my family began experiencing them firsthand. I was staying late as part of a play rehearsal at the high school my junior year and had forgotten something in my locker. I left the auditorium and went around the corner to my locker. In a hall that shaped like a U or a horseshoe, this meant there was a hall to my left and to my right, both of which led back to the old high school or out to the parking lot. It was around 10 o'clock at night, and there were a bunch of theater kids in the building. So it came as no surprise to me when a girl in a bright blue, old-fashioned dress hurried past me from the old hall towards the parking lot. I guess I'm not the only one who forgot something, I thought, and then realized I hadn't heard the door open. I called out, "Oh no, is the door locked?" And no one answered. I closed my locker and turned around to see that the doors were, in fact, padlocked shut, and there was no girl. She just vanished into thin air. I didn't go anywhere alone during the late rehearsals after that. A few years later, my little sister, not a theater nerd like me, was big on the swim team. She'd work as a lifeguard and basically lived at the middle school pool. The swimmers were hardcore and would arrive at 5 a.m. in the morning to swim when it was still pitch dark and no one else was there. She and another girl arrived one morning, as per usual, entered the school, only to hear the sounds of children giggling and goofing off inside the pool complex. They unlocked the door and ran in, trying to catch what they thought were trespassers. In the dark, they heard feet splashing across the deck and up the stairs to the observation deck and took off after the running children, shouting at them to stop. Then they got up the stairs to the observation deck. There were no children. There's no other way down from that section of the pool unless you jump into the pool itself, which you might not even make it to. There was simply no other explanation. The ghosts had gone swimming. Years have passed, and the high school has been torn down. I can't help but wonder if the children are gone forever, or if you might be able to see them on that dirt field if you waited long enough. Lola from Los Angeles.
I think the water in the pool probably helped conduct the ghosts.
Being, sure.
You know, a conduit for them.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to swim if I was a ghost.
I would too. It's interesting that she saw somebody in period attire and thought it was just somebody practicing for the play.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's one of those things, because you hear a lot of stories of haunted schools. And I mean, and there's not very often a lot of deaths in schools. You know, it's not super common,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you look statistically at where people are dying.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people that look back at schools and high schools as some of their best times of their lives and have very fond memories of it. And so I wonder when you have things like that where you can't necessarily attribute like, oh, you know, this accident happened here and these people are dead. I wonder if it's one of those things where, you know, if you pass on, you can go haunt someplace, you can kind of choose the area you want to go to, and they're going back and kind of trying to re-experience the happy points of their life, or if there's something they're trying to correct or change. I mean, it's such an emotionally charged time.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's something where it's, you know, to go back and fix this or change this, and there they are.
Go back to when they were happiest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if that's the case when you have some of the hauntings in schools where there's no real attributable reason why there would be dead people there or mm-hmm. ghosts there.
I don't know.
Just an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm.
The phone number here is 855-853-4802. If you'd like to share your real ghost story with us, of course, you can also write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Lots of ways to get your stories to us. So if you'd like to watch this, there's going to be an exorcism on television coming up. Destination America is to air attempted exorcism of house that inspired The Exorcist.
Okay, the house?
The house.
Okay.
So I don't know if there's stuff still going on at the house or what, but this is an Entertainment Weekly article I'm going to share with you. It says when there's something strange in your neighborhood and it hasn't disappeared for over 60 years, well, who are you going to call? Real-life paranormal investigators, apparently. EW can exclusively reveal, Entertainment Weekly can reveal, that Destination America will air the first live televised exorcism in the U.S. with the upcoming special Exorcism Live! With an exclamation point. Starring psychic medium Chip Coffey and the cast of Ghost Asylum. I've never seen Ghost Asylum. The special will focus on the investigation of the house and inspire the Exorcist novel and a film in the suburbs of St. Louis, Missouri. This is not the first time that an exorcism has been televised. In 1971, NBC aired the first ever televised exorcism. I did not know that. However, this is the first time that an exorcism will be performed on the house itself, and the first time it will be broadcast live. The exorcism, in particular, will take place 66 years after one of several were performed on Ronald Doe in 1949 at the St. Louis house. Exorcism Live will air this October live from the house. Destination America will also be set at San Diego Comic-Con giving away Ghost Asylum bags to fans. There you go.
Okay.
So, there you go. My prediction, it's going to be about as exciting as Geraldo going in to try and find an old, was it a mafioso figure? It was, so we were very, very young. You know what I'm talking about? It was the thing that kind of made Geraldo go from being a credible journalist to a tabloid journalist.
What was that?
I don't remember. It was like, I think, wasn't it like somebody's safe or something? And they were like going to knock down the wall and then they did, and there was like nothing there.
I will find out.
It was a giant letdown. First, you need to know how to spell Geraldo.
I know how to spell Geraldo. You're the one with spelling issues.
Geraldo.
I know.
Ta-da! Let's see who can find it first. Geraldo actually did do an interesting piece, if you can find it on YouTube, about the old Cropsey.
Oh, really?
Back when it actually was an active hospital, quote unquote. He was one of the few that really did some interesting work looking into that back then. The Mystery of Al Capone's Vault.
Just found that.
1986. Okay. Ill-fated adventurer Rivera excavated what he had been told was the site of Al Capone's buried treasure trove. Rivera broadcast live, and the site was excavated, fully expecting to find a store of the former gangster's wealth. The show was heavily advertised, particularly on WGN Chicago. A medical examiner was brought along with the excavation case of any dead bodies. The show was on television for several hours, displacing regularly scheduled programming. As Rivera's team penetrated the vault, he was sure it would yield the famed loot. Unfortunately, the vault was found to contain a few broken bottles. Vera was one of held onto one of these bottles aloft for the camera and excitedly stated that it had once contained bootlegged moonshine gin.
Wow.
Sure it did, Geraldo. So, there you go. I'm feeling it's probably going to be about that successful. Unless they got it planned to be staged, which any good producer would.
Uh-huh.
If you're going on live TV.
There's going to be stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, you ain't got shit.
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing, I don't know. This one, yeah, I'm just going to guess it's not going to work out.
I'd rather finish watching The Walking Deceased.
Which was horrible.
It was horrible.
Horribly funny. But, yeah, we were joking about this. We finally started watching it on Netflix the other night. And it's like a scary movie, but yeah. It's about, like, The Walking Dead.
Well, it makes fun of every zombie movie possible. Yeah. It's a combination of Zombieland, Warm Bodies, and The Walking Dead.
I will say it was slightly better than I was expecting.
I didn't realize it was supposed to be satirical till partway through it.
Yeah, I didn't either.
And then I thought, okay, for satire, it's okay.
Yeah, for satire. You just have to go in knowing that that's what you're watching. Yeah. Not expecting, like, I'm really going to get scared here.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when the Carl, they literally named the kid Carl, and he looks like Carl from The Walking Dead, when he shoots his stripper mom.
Yeah.
Who's the only living stripper in the strip club that Carl is owning and running, which is, so there you go. It's interesting, to say the least. Natasha writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. I've recently come across your podcast, and I can't stop listening to it. I feel like I've had many paranormal experiences, and some of the discussions you've had regarding stories have answered many of my questions. I remember spooky things happening in my family home from a very young age, and about a year and a half ago on Christmas, I finally captured a picture that I have to share with you guys. I'm going to start off with a thing that happened a few weeks previous to the picture. My mom does believe in the supernatural, but hasn't seen anything in our own home. And one night, a couple weeks before Christmas, my twin was visiting and they were outside talking. When walking into her family room, my mom got pushed over by something and was surprised to look back and see my twin, Bianca, closing the door. She said it felt like she or someone had rushed past her. That's why she had nearly fallen. During the trip, my mom happened to lose her glasses and couldn't find them for nearly a week. I was saying that we thought the spirits may be irritated because we had been hearing a lot more things than usual. So a few days had passed and my mom apologized to whatever, if anything, may be in our home, only to turn around to see her glasses placed perfectly on the kitchen counter only moments later. Things were calm for the next week or so, and then finally Christmas came. Bianca was visiting again. We were both home alone around 8 or so at night. We were taking pictures in the kitchen, and the next day I received a text from her explaining that I had taken one of only myself on her phone, so she thought it was funny So she sent it to me. A couple hours later, I was with my boyfriend and he wanted to see the picture. I'm still confused as to what happened because I felt like I was always taking a picture with someone, notably Bianca, and couldn't believe I didn't remember this. As my boyfriend closely examined the photo, he told me I was right and I wasn't alone. He zoomed in on the window placed behind me in the photo, and I was shocked to see a full figure standing right beside me. I was terrified. I've showed many friends this photo, and even people who don't believe before can't explain this to me. When the picture is zoomed out, you can clearly tell that nothing is close enough to me to be that close in the reflection. People have asked if it's possible that someone was outside the window, but leaving our house as a couple steps going down, so the person would need to be nearly over 8 foot tall, which people aren't, that I know. People also ask what the window is reflecting, and the wall it shows is our entrance, and the only thing in it is our pantry door. No coat racks or anything of that nature. My family thinks it may be my dad, seeing as how it was taken on Christmas night, and he did pass away there on hospice. I also think so because I didn't feel any kind of uneasiness at the time of this photo. But I also know it's wishful thinking, and things were happening before his passing. I find it reassuring, but I may never know what this truly is. Maybe even a playful spirit, but I really just wanted to share this picture and let me know if you think it's possible that it is a spirit. Any feedback you can give me would be amazing, and I can't wait for more future podcasts. Thanks so much for taking the time to read this. Have you seen the photo?
I think she tried to send it to you. So I don't know if you've gotten it or not, but do try and send it in. Send it to me this time.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing it.
Yeah, Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. And we'll get it posted so everybody can take a look and weigh in on it.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I mean, I wonder, do you think that she actually, that she snapped the photo? Or do you think it might have just been, you know, she's waving her camera around at one point or another and it took a photo. And it happened to be her dad there. Like, he manipulated it just to be, hey.
That could be. I don't know. I'm probably going to wait until I see it.
Okay.
To know what I think. I think the scariest photo-related story we've had is where somebody was asleep, and it was after they did an investigation, and then later they went through and looked at their pictures, and there was a picture of them sleeping that something had taken of them.
Yeah, and it was like from the top of the room.
Yeah.
That's the creepy, creepy part. I mean, now you could do that with like the selfie stick.
Uh-huh.
But you would be able to tell you were doing it with the selfie stick.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, that would just be so disturbing to find that. I think I'd be kind of freaked out. I'd be really freaked out. You see a lot of places starting to ban the selfie sticks.
No.
Like, I think Disney is slowly banning selfie sticks.
Because they stick out so far. And
I think they can possibly be used as a weapon, and just the fact that they're just annoying as hell and, they're just kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just hold your hand. My selfie stick is my arm.
Yeah.
And it works wonderfully.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I guess I've never used one. Maybe I shouldn't judge the use of a selfie stick. To me, the idea of a selfie, and it's because I guess I come from a totally different generation, being in my early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Maybe I'm not as narcissistic as the 18-year-olds that are using the selfie sticks, like, obsessively.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I can't picture myself being 18, or really anyone that I know being 18, and taking as many photos of themselves as they are doing now. Totally different way of growing up and different time and culture, I guess. I mean, though it's like we're talking 10 years difference.
I hate having my picture taken. That's why it took so long for us to start doing the video stuff.
Yeah.
You really had to twist my arm because I hate... I wouldn't take a picture of myself. I don't like it when other people take pictures of me.
The only time I ever took a picture of myself was when I was on the online dating sites when I met you. And I felt really weird doing it. I'm like, oh, this is so narcissistic. I'm taking a picture of myself. But you had to. I mean...
The picture I saw was your headshot.
Oh yeah, I had that. I had that too. But there was a couple. I took like some, just a couple more, just so they were there, because I didn't really have a whole lot of pictures of me. But now it's, you know, go to like anyone's phone, or not anyone, but you know, people of a certain age phone, and there's more just pictures of themselves, mm-hmm. just smiling in weird poses. It's like, what? That can't be healthy. It can't be. That cannot be a psychologically good thing. Where you feel the need to constantly take pictures of yourself.
I want to see a selfie ghost. A ghost that takes pictures of themselves so that we can have some documentation.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll happen at some point. I don't know. But I don't know. It can't be a good thing. I mean, what if someone... I mean, people do it so obsessively. Like, if for some reason they couldn't anymore, say... your phone disappeared, or people would be going through selfie withdrawal. They would. They'd end up like finding mirrors and just holding it up, you know, just be able to look at themselves.
I don't think so.
In this pose to deal with it.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I think it's yeah. There's gonna be a group for that, like Selfies Anonymous, where they go in and they're trying to break the habit of taking selfies because it's starting to become a hindrance to their lives.
I saw a card that I thought was great, and it said, "May your life be actually half as cool as you try and make it sound on Facebook."
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Gianna writes in, I grew up in the Houston County area of Northern New Jersey, or Hudson County area of Northern New Jersey, an urban area that is a 10 minute bus ride into Manhattan. I lived in a 3-family house on the top floor apartment with my parents and 2 younger brothers. My bedroom was the first one on the left and searched a wall with the kitchen. I had bunk beds at the time and had them against the wall. Living there for a while, I became used to the nightly sounds of the pipes and the dishwasher. I've always been a night owl, so one night I was about 12 or 13, I was up late and everyone in the house had been sound asleep. I was watching TV on low volume so as not to wake anyone up or let them know I was still awake. When I started to hear scratching noises in the wall, I turned the TV off and put my ear on the wall and heard more random scratching noises. I tapped the wall twice and then something scratched twice, like in response to my tapping. I did it again and added 2 more taps and the scratching mimicked my patterns of tapping. At this point, I was thinking one of my little brothers was awake and messing with me from the other side of the wall, which was the kitchen. So I get up to go catch the little sucker without thinking or turning on any light because I figured since they are so much younger than me, they wouldn't venture through the house in the dark. When I turned the corner, going into the kitchen, I felt like something was there. I turned to look at the counter and the area where I thought the scratching could be coming from and saw a black shadowy figure on the counter. It was small and kind of fluffy looking. To me, it looked like a small dog. It jumped from the counter and started running into the darkness of the living room. As soon as it took off, I started screaming my head off because it was so fast and abrupt that I got startled and at the same time realized this obviously was not one of my brothers. My parents woke up and came running into the kitchen where I was and turned on all the lights. They were super annoyed at me and didn't believe my story at all. My brothers were fast asleep the whole time and didn't even wake up with all the commotion. I feel like it was an animal spirit or something, but to this day, I have no idea. I never saw anything like it again. I just started listening to the show, and I love it. I wanted to share my weird little story after I heard another listener's story about seeing a sheepdog spirit disappear before her eyes. Are there animal ghosts?
I think there are.
I think it can happen.
I think it's interesting to see a shadow pet instead of an apparition of an animal, but I think it can happen.
Well, I think it's like how we talk about ghosts of people, too, and I don't think that they're always showing up in their full-fledged form. Like, hey, there's Joe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, hey, here's a weird shadow figure. Oh, it's Joe! You know, it's just, everyone, I think, has different ways of appearing.
Yeah.
So I suppose that can be conveyed to the animal world as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that it mimicked the sound. That would be really kind of creepy.
That would be.
To think about. I was out earlier today and I was trying to mow our front yard and I had to get the lawnmower out of the shed in our backyard and I heard a little scratching.
Oh no.
When I was in there getting the mower out and I'm like, okay, come out. And then
Oh, really?
Ran a little mouse.
A little mouse?
Stuart Little.
Oh.
He was wearing a raincoat and had a hat.
Okay.
Well, he looked like he could have been one of those mice.
Okay.
He was friendly. And then he saw me and ran right back in.
Oh, no.
So he's in there.
Okay,
it's fine. I mean, it's just a shed outside. There's nothing he can destroy. You know, he can live in there.
Little mice are okay. Big, nasty rats are not.
It wasn't a big, nasty rat. Okay. It was just a little mouse.
Okay.
And I wasn't about to do anything to him. I just like, he lives out here as a field mouse. So I think they're attracted to, I have a little grass seed in there and they like grass seed.
Okay.
So I think he's just having a buffet.
Like literally fertilizer grass seed.
Not fertilizer that would kill him. No, like okay. Literally grass seed.
Okay.
Like just the seed itself, which they eat.
Okay.
So it's like a buffet. It's not like, toxic.
Okay.
So. He's a well-fed. There's a lot of grass seed in there in a bucket.
I wonder if it's going to have babies. Remember the time we found the baby mice?
Where did we find? Oh, yeah, in the grill cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did find them. They were living in the fabric grill cover that had been sitting off the grill for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I ushered them out to the field.
Them up in a big cup and took them out there and let them go.
Yeah.
It was so sweet.
Well, they were cute. They were nice little mice.
It was very sweet.
And then I knitted them raincoats. All right. Next story. Sunny writes in, hello, Tony and Jenny. My name is Sunny from Orange. First off, love your show. Listen to you guys while at work. Love it. I would like to give you my stories in order from my very first one to the last. Long Beach, California, 1984, 1985. Should be Dateline. Long Beach, California, 1984, 1985. The following story. I can't think of how the line goes.
Okay.
The names in the following story have been changed to protect the innocent. I was in preschool or kindergarten and can't remember the name of the school. All I can remember is to never go to this girl's, to the girl's restroom alone. That restroom always would have given me the creeps. We were told by the other kids that a girl had killed herself in the girl's restroom and haunts the restroom. That's a nice thing to have in your kindergarten. Also, there were two doors to the girl's restroom, one to go in and out and the other to come out. You couldn't go out the outdoor you'd come right from. Right next to the exit door was another door, and we were told that the devil lives in that room. That sounds like an average elementary school. It was said that if you knocked on the door, the devil would knock back. Being a little girl, that door and restroom would scare the crap out of me. One day, I had forgotten to use the restroom on my lunch break, and when I got to class, I had the urge to go. I was trying to hold it until class ended, but couldn't do it. I remember standing at the very top of the staircase and looking down and saying to myself, should I go? Finally got the balls to go, ran in and ran out. On my way out, I see the door and was thinking to myself if I should knock on the door. Stupid me did it, and it did knock back at me. I ran up those stairs so fast and didn't look back. As I got older and told that story, I knew that the devil didn't live in there, but wondered what the hell knocked back at me. And there's a cafeteria. All I could say is that I would see people that I knew didn't belong there. They were kind of transparent and just looked off, but at that age, I just didn't know what the hell was going on. At that age, I didn't know about ghosts or spirits, so it never scared me until we moved to Santa Ana. I will write back with my stories about the cul-de-sac at our elementary school.
I think you can explain away the knocking, but seeing semi-transparent people you know aren't supposed to be there is a whole different ballgame.
I don't know, the knocking is kind of creepy.
Well, the knocking's creepy too, but I mean, if you don't know what that room is or where it goes to,
mm-hmm.
there could be somebody that works in there.
There could be an office in there.
Yeah.
There's like a janitorial office.
Yeah.
And that's just they get their kicks because they know the kids do it because of the rumor.
Yeah.
And so they just stand there when it happens. You're like, I'm like, oh, I just freaked the hell out of a kid.
Mm-hmm. I could see
that's,
that.
That's true. Yeah, the transparent people, though, that's a little more difficult to explain away.
Yeah, very much so.
Just slightly. Jody writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. This is Jody from South Carolina. I have always been interested in the paranormal. I recently stumbled across your podcast and have been binge listening. I love it. I plan to become an EPP listener soon. I have several stories, but would like to share one with you today. I think I've always been sensitive to the paranormal. Several things happened in my home growing up, and in most every place we have lived. My husband is zero sensitive at all and always brushes off anything I say happens. He's not mean about it. I just think it's hard for him to believe when he himself has never experienced anything. Anyway, the story I want to tell you about today is about an old metal bed my sister gave me. To begin the story, I'll give you a little history. Grew up in an old mill house. It was built around the 1900s. You can see the old mill from our kitchen window. My sister, when she got older, bought a house across the street from my parents. The house went up for sale when the older lady who lived there died. I remember seeing her up when I was growing up, but I did not really know her. Anyway, when my sister bought the house, the old full metal bed frame was still in the house from that old woman. At one time or the other, my sister had complained of scary things happening in the house. She never went into detail, but she lived alone and was so uncomfortable that I remember my parents and my older brother going over and praying over it and putting the mark of the cross using olive oil over it, all the windows and doors. You can use olive oil?
I didn't know that either.
This is the first use of olive oil. Mm-hmm. Virgin or extra virgin? Does it matter?
I would imagine extra virgin, but...
Can it be flavored? Can you have, like, garlicky zest olive oil to do this? Or is this just someone not realizing that it was holy water? Or was it olive oil?
I don't know.
Certain brands work better?
Maybe they were supposed to use holy water and they didn't realize that and used olive oil.
Anything could be blessed.
Yeah.
In theory. I mean, you could bless olive oil. I mean, not you, but a priest could.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose it could essentially be, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong on that. I wonder. I'm just asking.
I don't know.
I assume this helped because I don't remember her mentioning anything again for a long time. Anyway, fast forward to me being married. My sister was married, and she and her husband had gotten a larger queen-size bed. She knew I loved antiques and offered me the old metal bed frame. I jumped at the offer because my husband and I had a full-size mattress, but our bed frame did not have a head and footboard. After getting this bed for my sister, I remember being woken up sometime by the bed shaking. Not hard, but just shaking. My husband always seemed to sleep through this. I was never scared by this, but thought it was extremely weird. I was talking to my sister one day and mentioned this, and she said that it had also shaken when she had it. My husband and I eventually got a queen-size bed. We kept the bed frame. I assumed that one day we could use it for my son when he outgrew his crib. We were living out of the country at the time in a huge old house that was falling down around our ears. We had it stored in one of the empty bedrooms upstairs. When we moved out, my son was still in a crib, and my husband asked if I wanted to take it or leave the bed frame. And I told him I had no desire to keep it anymore. Too many things had happened in our former house and the current house we were leaving, and I associated some of it with the bed. One of them included two little girls coming and crawling up on that bed while we were asleep. I'll write about that another time. Thank you again. I hope you like my story. Keep up the good work. I find myself chuckling at your banter. I love it. Sincerely, Jody.
Okay, so it makes you wonder when you buy an old home and they've left furniture. Why did they leave that piece of furniture?
Yeah, I'm not usually very keen on using other people's furniture.
We saw an abandoned house. What was that, up in Wisconsin?
And you looked
in the window and you're like, there's a dresser in there.
Oh my goodness, yeah. We were driving back from northern Michigan and it was in between Green Bay and my hometown in Fond du Lac.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the route that goes on the non-populated side of Lake Winnebago. And just through some farms and everything. And there was this old farmstead house. And we just come around the corner. I said, look at that. And it was great. It was really sturdy looking still. Mm-hmm. But I mean, clearly abandoned and somewhat falling apart. All the windows gone. But you could see up into the upper bedroom window and this giant vanity.
Yeah.
I could see the mirror on it. And like the different panes of the mirror. And you could tell it was just this old antique vanity. Probably in horrible condition. But I was surprised, like, the mirror still looked not broken, which is odd.
It is.
I mean, just with, you know, vandalism and kids going out and exploring and breaking shit. And the fact that this mirror is still in this house, which clearly had not been lived in for at least 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
At a minimum.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
It was very creepy.
Would have loved to have gone in there and taken pictures.
Oh, I know. I'm just afraid of you falling through the floor, getting hurt, or somebody thinking they're maliciously and shooting you.
Yeah, those are the fears. Yeah. I'm much more afraid of the living than the dead when it comes to those situations.
Yeah.
But really creepy, creepy looking place. It was just very odd to see that. When you have, I was almost wondering, it was running through my mind, like, how is that mirror still intact?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like, is there something else going on that
something's
that,
protecting it?
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of getting at.
Maybe.
Geraldo.
Call Geraldo on that.
No, Geraldo's protecting it. He's living up there now.
Okay.
That's his new home. It's on Dillinger's route. Probably was. It probably actually was one of the routes that he took.
Yeah.
Anyhow, there you go. That's our story for it. That's our stories for today. If you like the show, please support it. Sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person. Get all those bonus episodes. That's what keeps us on the air. It's only $5 a month to get access to the EPP website. Jam-packed with exclusive video content, exclusive audio content. We add to it all throughout the week to keep our EPPs happy. And you have all that past stuff that we've added for your enjoyment. So, hours upon hours upon hours of more exclusive Real Ghost Story stuff for you, and our best stories too. It's at realghoststoriesonline.com. Just click become an EPP and you will get access. So once you sign up, $5 a month, less than the cost of a cup of coffee.
There you go.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Less than the cup of a cost.
Or a Shasta. Or a Dr. Pepper. You know, a big one. Really big one.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks for listening. For Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.